The history of Vancouver is the subject of two sets of panoramic pictures by photographers Sven-Erik Eriksson and Henri Robideau. The show, Vancouver Panoramas, is now on view at the Tech Gallery at the SFU downtown campus. Laura Lamb saw the show, and she's here with her thoughts. Hi, Laura.
Good morning.
What do you see when you first enter the gallery?
Well, on one wall, you see photographs, panoramas, of Hastings Street. These were taken in 1972, I believe, and they show the whole streetscape, the storefronts on both sides of the street from, I believe, Abbott to Main. So the effect is that you see something that you could never see in real life, which is every storefront at the same time, all lined up. They look very, very orderly, and it's also another striking thing about it is they look very quiet. It's a very, very still pictures. On the opposite wall, you see panoramas of demonstrations, big demonstrations that happened in the 1980s, the mid-1980s in Vancouver, and these are by Henri Robideau. And they're also panoramas, but they're quite different in look because whereas the ones on the other side, apparently, they were taken in 1972, but they were put together in Photoshop just recently. So they're very seamless looking, whereas the seams in Robideau's are very obvious because what he's done is he's taken pictures with a regular camera and, you know, pivoted around to make a panorama out of many pictures, and then he's cut them so that they fit together. And of course, they don't fit together in a seamless way. So he very carefully cut them on different angles so that you get this effect of a panorama. But if you look at them closely, you can see the seams. And on the bottom of these things, which I guess are about, each one would be about maybe 5 foot long and 2 feet high, perhaps. He's written in pen the titles, which are quite extensive. For instance, a title on one of them is Giant Blockade of Organized Labor and the Building Trades on Anti-Union Contractor Kirchhoff's Falls Creek Construction Site, March 12, 1984. And another one, it's a giant crowd of 50,000 people marched to show their disgust for the Socred government's mass firing of 5,000 teachers and government workers, elimination of human rights code, grants to legal aid, dismantling, etc., etc. It goes on. I didn't write it all down. My hand got tired. I think 5 or 6 panoramas of these mass protests. And the effect is really to show how huge these gatherings of people were.
So let's talk about his wall. Why do you think all the caption of these pictures, protests, begin with the word giant, given that usually it's not something that you would describe a gathering of people with?
Yeah. It relates to Robideau's long-term project over a few decades, which is to document giant things. He had this book published called Coast to Coast, Canada's Gigantic, or something, Pacific to Atlantic, of course, Canada's Gigantic. And he's been on this project called Giganthropology. So, for instance, those pictures are all the giant tourist attractions that people put up on the side of the roads, like a giant Pisanki eggs, giant Canada geese, everything to giant milk cartons, giant lumberjacks, giant nickels. So that's his interest, and that's where these are coming from.
Giant roadside objects seem very different from, you know, huge gatherings of people about issues. How can an enormous, you know, enormous nickel or an enormous Ukrainian egg and a gathering of people or a protest be part of the same artistic project?
Well, it may be strange at first to think of demonstrations as cultural objects, but in a sense they are. And both the demonstrations and these giant roadside attractions are kind of grassroots expressions, people's cultural expressions, which use scale in order to have impact. So there is, I think, a connection and a reason why the demonstrations could be called giant.
Are they also viewed as or shown as in bad taste or overly cute, like some of these giant roadside objects are?
That's an interesting problem, I guess, because when in photographing these roadside attractions, they do, in Robidoux's photographs, and I'm referring to work that isn't up at the gallery, but I think it's relevant. They're taken with a wide-angle lens, and that makes them look kind of distant and alone and kind of odd. So there's this ironic distance from them, which goes along with this idea that they're kitsch, really. But I think there is a connection, because in both types of cultural objects, demonstrations, and giant roadside attractions, there's a kind of a pathos in how the reach of the people who made these things, whether they were an event that happens over time or a giant object, kind of exceeds their grasp, and that's part of the reason we love them, I think. So there could be a relationship there.
Is Robidoux taking the same kind of ironic distance with these protest panoramas?
Well, they're not so much, because the photographer, Robidoux, was right in the crowd. There isn't that sense that he was far away and looking from a distance. And if there is any irony left, it's undercut by the text, which clearly states his sympathies for the demonstrations. For instance, one of them, which shows the huge crowd that went past the Hotel Vancouver in 1984, or I'm not sure what year it was, 83, I think, where the Socreds were having their convention, and he describes the people who are standing on the sidewalk watching them: fluffy sweater, hip capitalist, flat top entrepreneur, Socred convention candidates being confronted, etc., etc. So there's no doubt where his sympathies lie.
Turning now to the pictures on the other wall, the panoramic streetscape of Hastings by Sven Erik Eriksson. How do these two works inform each other? Is there a relationship between them besides being panoramas?
Well, the first thing that you notice is a real contrast in that Robidoux's are full of people. They're an overabundance of humanity. And the Hastings Street photographs are completely empty, because he took them very early on a Sunday morning when there were no people there. And the purpose of them was to be a background for an animation. So they have this sense of absence of people. Both, though, are just absolutely packed full of interesting facts. For me, as a Vancouverite, I can say for both of them, oh, I was there. I see, you know, that's the way it was. You can even look in the demonstration to see if you see any of your friends, because there's a lot of people there, and if you look carefully, you might see one, or even yourself. And for the Hastings one also, that 1972 is when I came to Vancouver, and I compare Hastings Street then as it is now, and felt a little bit of nostalgia for all these things that I remember that the photograph reminds me of. And both of them, you know, are just chock full of facts, and those facts tell a lot and make them really interesting.
What did the facts tell you?
Well, the facts told me something that was very different from one thing that was written on the wall that really bothered me. It said, quote, "The downtown east side has long been associated with crime and underworld activity. That was as true in the 1970s as it is today." And that, I thought that was idiotic. That's not what was there. Why bring in that stereotype of central Vancouver? You know, what I saw in this panorama of Hastings Street is a city that was changing, a city center, which is what Hastings used to be, which was deteriorating, which had been abandoned and was fading. But, you know, and that was part of a planned planned development strategy to move the downtown Vancouver to the west and let the east part of downtown Vancouver fade. But in these photographs, you can see how vital it still was. You know, all the activity, all the shops, all the things that go on in a city center. And, you see that that Hastings was a kind of organic grassroots cultural expression, what a street should be, or what writers like Jane Jacobs have said that cities should be, and that it's similar to Rodo's cultural objects, I think, you know, in the demonstration as well.
How is this kind of factual documentary photography valuable?
Well, that brings me to another thing that was written on the wall that kind of dismayed me. The first quote was by the curator of the show, but Rovedo had a little artist statement written on the wall, and he said that his photographs were, quote, created in the spirit of what was known as, quote, documentary photography, which he goes on to say was killed by mass media technology. And I thought that that statement came off like an apology, that he was saying, sorry, I'm still taking these old-fashioned kind of photographs. I just, you know, kind of can't help it. And I wanted to say, Henry, don't apologize. Stand up for your values. Stand up for what you're doing, because it's important. And the same could be said for the photographs on the other side of the wall. They're important historical documents full of information that's worth looking at.
Well, thanks for talking about it with me today.
Well, thank you.
I've been talking to Laura Lamb about Vancouver Panoramas on view at the Tech Gallery until April 28th. The Tech Gallery is at 515 West Hastings in the Simon Fraser downtown campus.